Welcome to the podcast, People of the Book. I'm your host, Meryl Ain. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. We chat with authors and storytellers in thought-provoking and intimate interviews, all with a Jewish twist. On today's program, I'm delighted to welcome Michelle Cameron as my guest. Michelle is the award-winning author of several works of historical fiction and poetry, including Beyond the Ghetto Gates, The Fruit of Her Hands, The Story of Shira of Ashkenaz, and In the Shadow of the Globe. Her new novel, Babylon, a novel of Jewish captivity, is the multi-generational biblical saga of Sarah, her children, and grandchildren. Exiled to Babylon when King Nebuchadnezzar's army conquers Judea and destroys the temple. Michelle lived in Israel for 15 years and served as an officer in the Israeli army, teaching Air Force cadets technical English. She is a director of the Writers' Circle, a New Jersey-based organization that offers creative writing programs to children, teens, and adults. She lives in New Jersey with her husband and has two grown sons. So, Michelle, thank you for joining me today. And this is actually the second time you've been a guest on People of the Book podcast. You were actually the inaugural author on our first broadcast about a year and a half ago. So welcome back.
Well, thank you, Meryl. It is absolutely delightful to be back.
Well, thank you. Let's start by talking about your new novel, Babylon. I hardly know where to start. There's so much to unpack and ask about your mesmerizing, beautifully written, multi-generational biblical saga. So why don't you start by giving our listeners a brief summary of Babylon?
Absolutely.
If you can make it brief.
I will do my best. So Babylon begins with the Nebuchadnezzar's forces coming to Jerusalem and basically destroying the city, burning down the temple, and taking into captivity thousands of Judeans, including Sarah, who is a major character in the novel, and her cousin Reuven. They have to take this horrendous march through the desert until they reach Babylon, at which point they are settled in Judeans are settled in various places. They meet Seraph, a musician, and Sarah and Seraph have a very, very, very brief affair, which results in Sarah's first child, Ori, who becomes a scribe. The book really centers on how the Judeans have to avoid temptation, because Babylon, of course, is at this point the center of the world. It is a very wealthy, empire. And so many of the Judeans who have been brought over are tempted to change their faith, to become adherents to Marduk and the other gods, and to simply assimilate into the culture. The book also deals with the nobles of Babylon, including Nebuchadnezzar's three children who are vying for control of the kingdom after their father's death. And it is a often bloody novel because of all of the conflict going on, but it is also very much a novel of hope that eventually the Judeans will be able to return to Judea, which in the end they can. It also treats of several of the prophets from the Bible, particularly Daniel, who, as we learn, kneels by his window three times a day to pray in the direction of Jerusalem, as well as toward the end of the novel, in particular, Ezra, who has a very challenging road where he actually ends up saying that in order to preserve the Jewish faith, he exiles the many, many non-Jewish wives and children.
Yeah, that was my mind-boggling, and I was wondering if that actually happened. So that actually did happen. You write historical fiction, but this is really going back very, very far. What inspired you to tell this very ancient story?
Well, it actually happened when I was writing The Fruit of Her Hands, which dealt with the rise of anti-Semitism in medieval Europe, and in particular with the burning of 24 cartloads of volumes of the Talmud in a Paris market square. And while I was writing that scene, and my heroine Shira was watching these carts rumbling past her, she suddenly remembered the Psalm 137 about by the rivers of Babylon. And something just sort of woke inside me. In The Fruit of Her Hands, I had touched upon the issues of assimilation versus maintaining faith. But I realized that the story of Babylon, I would really be able to delve into that struggle. And so that was kind of the inspiration for it.
So before you started writing the book, I'm wondering, how familiar were you with this time period in Jewish history? Was this something that you knew something about, or did this involve, I assume it did, massive research? And what was your research process like?
So no, absolutely, it required quite a bit of research. And what's interesting about researching a time period that goes so far back is the fact that we know a great deal, but a lot of it is supposition. And in fact, one of the really fascinating things, and I posted about it actually yesterday, is that more and more archaeology that is taking place is showing that a lot of what we read about in the Bible is in fact fact. So that's been interesting to see. But I had to read a great deal about what Babylon itself was like. I had to read books like Josephus, which is a little bit suspect in terms of his veracity. And of course, read the Bible and try and take the stories from the Bible that deal directly with Babylon and try and imagine what could or could not truly have happened. There are a lot of miracles, especially in the book of Daniel, that I had to figure out a way to balance between the miracles as stated in the Bible, which I know a lot of my readers will in fact believe may have in fact happened, versus what, you know, my more pragmatic sense would say, well, maybe this is how it could have happened. So that was
what was your process in doing that?
Well, I mean, so it, Yeah, no. So, for example, there's the very famous scene of the handwriting on the wall. Mm-hmm. And I took one of my characters, who was one of Daniel's friends, and I had him there in, you know, sort of swathed in a black cloak. And the assumption was maybe he was the one who wrote on the wall, but mm-hmm. I never explicitly said that. So there was a lot of that. There were times when some of the stories that were being told out were called into question by the Judeans. The very famous Daniel in the Lion's Den was basically told as a dream. Mm-hmm. So I had to look for some very creative ways to retell these stories.
Absolutely. So I understand that Babylon took more than a decade to finally be published. Why do you think this was the case?
When I wrote Babylon, it was immediately after writing The Fruit of Her Hands. And I literally fell in love with this book. I mean, I know we fall in love with all of our books, but right. This one, I think,
this was your favorite child.
This was my favorite child. And I was stunned when my agent of the time had a very lukewarm response to it. Mm-hmm. But she did her job. She put it out there. But the problem was it was a recession year. It was 2009. And so I got a lot of rave rejections, a lot of, if only I could publish this, but right now is not the time. So I ended up saying, okay, you know, I've tried it. I put it on the shelf and I went to write my next book. And so it was actually, and I came back to it every once in a while. I touched it up. I got some very good advice from people in how to make it even more compelling. But mm-hmm. it wasn't until I belonged to a Facebook group of Jewish women writers. And there, someone said, oh, look, there's this new Jewish imprint out there, Wicked Sun Books. You know, maybe some of us would be interested in it. Well, I certainly was. And I sent out a query letter the next day and waited for quite a while and finally figured, well, maybe they're not interested. But then got an email from the publisher saying, I really love the first part of this novel. I think I may want to publish it. I'm going to keep reading.
Ah.
Which is a very mixed message if you think about it, Meryl. Because, you know, I think I may publish it. So I was on.
How did you feel about that?
I compulsively checked my email like for the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. When finally he wrote me back and said, I'd like to set up a phone call. And this, you know, the phone call was the indication, yes, he was going to publish it. So
that must have been very difficult.
It was first of all, it was an oh my God, and then it was a as you know, publishing requires tons and tons of patience. So
often, you know, the almost don't materialize.
Exactly. So I feel incredibly fortunate that this book, which I always thought would someday be published, is going to see the light of day.
Wow. Well, there's just, as I said, so much to unpack here. So let me ask you something that was really troubling me about a topic that you discussed in the book, I was, it was very, very interesting, but troubling. So that was the discussion of castration. And I really just wanted to ask you, did this actually happen to all Jewish slaves who worked in the king's court, and why? And why did you think it was important to include in the book?
So there are sources that talk about how Daniel, who worked in the court, and others had to be castrated because of the fact that they were serving royalty, and royalty was akin to deity, and therefore, you know, they had to be basically unable to conceive children.
So it was like celibacy.
Celibacy.
Celibacy taken to the extreme.
Yes, that's the word I was searching for. Mm-hmm. And so that was the reason I felt like it was, you know, something that needed to be included in this novel, because, you know, it's the slaves in the palace lived these rich lives, but they were forced into this and they really had no choice. And again, even Daniel the prophet had been castrated.
I know that's just a difficult that's difficult, at least for me, to wrap my head around.
I don't disagree. A lot of people who have read early drafts of the novel have commented that the castration chapter, which is only the aftermath. I always keep saying that it's only the aftermath. I don't literally show castration.
Well, yeah, we should make that clear. But that just seems, certainly very, very archaic and very troubling.
But yes.
So I was just wondering if that was actually the case or not.
Yeah, that's what my research showed me, that it was in fact the case.
Okay. So there are many fascinating characters in the book, and I think you do a wonderful job in bringing them to life. Can you tell us a little bit about Sarah, Mara, and Chava, and what inspired you to write about them, and what did you want modern day readers to think about through these characters?
So Sarah, of course, starts the novel off. She's a very strong woman. She is able to make a life for herself in Babylon through many, many, many challenges. And she really is the glue that holds the family together, which is something I think a lot of modern day readers will resonate with. Her daughter Mara really, to me, represented the real struggle in trying to keep faith with God under these incredibly difficult circumstances. She's brought, into servitude in the palace due to the fact that, her father had made a promise to one of the princesses. And she struggles with her faith. And she really becomes very bitter. In fact, the Hebrew name Mara means bitterness.
Right.
It's only towards the end of the novel that she becomes reconciled with her faith, with God. And so that, again, I think is very important under really difficult circumstances, how women have to find their strength and rebound. In terms of Chava, one reader pointed out to me that Chava is kind of Sarah, redone. This is Sarah's goddaughter. She is the one that actually ends up back on the farm in Judea. Mm-hmm. She gives her grandmother the tremendous gift of sacrificing herself in a way to be able to bring Sarah home to the farm that she had lost. And she is able to make her life back in Judea under really, again, somewhat difficult circumstances. But she has just as much strength as her grandmother had in doing so.
Right. Who are your favorite characters, if you had any, in this favorite child of your book? Did you have a favorite character or characters?
I think all of them, which I know it's like, you know, how can you choose among your children? But you choose among them, I think, for very, very different reasons. Obviously, these three really shone out. But also, on the other side of things, I love Seraph, who is the musician who falls in love with Sarah. I loved Uli, who is the scribe. And who, you know, one of the ways that the Jews kept faith with God was through taking the time while in Babylon to write down all of many, many, many of the stories that end up in the Bible. And so Uli is the one who is able to he writes the stories from Genesis, and he struggles with their messages. He also marries Zakiti, who is his Babylonian wife. And really theirs is a wonderful love affair. There were many, many characters, I guess is what I'm saying, that I really fell in love with.
So Michelle, I think all writers of historical fiction have to think about this. So how do you decide which elements of the story you're going to fictionalize? And do you have any rules for yourself about this?
I think the most important rule that I have is that the story has to come first. So a really good example of this is toward the end of the book is I relate how Ezra the prophet comes to Jerusalem, which he did do, and who basically exiles the non-Jewish wives and children in order to sort of purify the Jewish faith. And that happened.
Really horrible by modern day standards.
Absolutely. I basically condensed history to make this happen in the same time period, because it basically happened almost 100 years later. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I do allow myself to do is allow myself to sort of cherry pick those historical moments that I really want to tell. And and sometimes timeline wise, if I had stretched that book out another 100 years, I'd never have been able to finish it. And it also wouldn't have had the impact. So I think my basic rule is story first, but trying to be as real to the history and to the facts of the time as I possibly can.
Right. Well, you know, it is an ancient story, but it certainly has, I don't know if you want to say it's a cautionary tale, or it certainly has resonance for modern readers, can you talk to us about the theme of assimilation versus keeping faith, which runs not only through Babylon, but through your other novels as well?
Absolutely. And it is absolutely a theme that I keep coming back to time and again. The difficulty I think that the Judeans faced is that their God was vanquished. And in ancient times, you know, basically the feeling was if one God vanquishes another, it is the more powerful of the gods. So in this case, they were faced, the Judeans were faced with a vanquished God. They were faced with the loss of the temple, which was the center of religion for them at the time. And they had to learn how to sustain their faith without the temple, without the ability to sacrifice. And so they turned to prayer, which, you know, I think is shown with Daniel kneeling by his window three times a day facing Jerusalem, and to transcribing the stories of their culture, of their faith. But in many, many ways, it really was a struggle. I mean, you're picked up and you're transported to this amazing empire, far, far wealthier than anything that you've ever experienced before. And so how could it possibly not be a temptation? And I show one of Sarah's daughters actually ends up fully embracing the Babylonian culture to the point where her children pray to their idols before eating dinner that day. And Sarah has to witness this, which in a lot of ways is akin to many of us today who welcome, and I really mean welcome, non-Jewish members into our families and have to, you know, witness how that culture is brought into our families. And it can be difficult. I can tell you that from experience.
It is a fact of life today. I believe the latest figure was that more than 70% of Jews marrying today are intermarrying. So how did the Jews survive as a people when so many ancient communities did not? And how do we continue to survive as we assimilate? Was that a question you wanted your readers to think about?
I think it's a question I want readers to think about. Thank you for giving me an out, because I don't have an answer to your last question. How do we do it? I think often it is, again, I speak from experience. I have both my sons are either married or marrying non-Jewish girls. But certainly I think that it ends up being sort of a meshing of the traditions that they had. I mean, they come to my house every year for the Seder. We light the candles. We do, you know, a number of things that, you know, and they plan to preserve this in their own families.
Right.
Is that enough? I don't know. I mean, it was very much a cautionary tale that at this point, Israel was basically in two pieces. And 100 years before, the Israelite kingdom was basically conquered by the Assyrians. And this is sort of where the 10 lost tribes come in, because they fully assimilated into the various places that they were sent in their own exile. So I think that we had to work really, really hard to keep our faith in Babylon. And maybe that's the answer, is that we have to sustain our faith in any ways that we can, and in different ways, because that was kind of the clue in Babylon, is that they were able to do this in different ways from what they were used to back in Judea.
And maybe there are different ways required for the 21st century.
Exactly.
So were there any other questions or themes that you wanted to raise for readers?
I think that, you know, certainly I hope that readers will come to this novel, you know, hoping for a great story, which I know is not a theme. But
that's okay.
Certainly that there's a great deal to learn from the challenges that our ancient ancestors faced. I also feel like, actually, this is a good point, that we don't think about the Babylonian exile that much when we think about Jewish history. We certainly think about, you know, the biblical past. We think about the Jews coming out of Egypt, and then a lot of us just skip over to the Romans. But I think what the Babylonians did for Jewish religion was able to give us the tools to survive when we were in the even greater exile in the diaspora, when the Romans sort of threw us out of our own country.
That's fascinating. That's interesting. Thank you. So I understand that you're expecting the birth of another novel next year. Do you want to tell us a little about it?
Sure, absolutely. So this is the sequel to Beyond the Ghetto Gates. In Beyond the Ghetto Gates, of course, this was centered on Napoleon's demolishing the ghetto gates throughout Italy while he was still a young general. And it also told the story of Morel, of Daniel and Christoph, Daniel and Christoph being young soldiers with Napoleon. Napoleon's mirage follows Daniel and Christoph as they accompany Napoleon on this very, very strange expedition into Egypt, which he basically did as a way to counter British forces that were in India. Napoleon actually had ambitions that he would conquer Egypt and then move to India and conquer India, which of course never happened. But the book continues Daniel and Christoph's story, as well as Morel's story. She's back in Ancona. She is facing a great many difficulties because her society has basically branded her as a ruined woman, and she's finding it very difficult. And so this story takes us through Napoleon's conquest of Egypt with many, many, many mistakes that he makes, and then his march into Israel, including his defeat in Acre. And it also talks about his proclamation to the Jews, which supposedly promises the Jews a Jewish homeland in Jerusalem years and years and years before the Zionists. And of course, we know that didn't happen either. And the whole story of the proclamation of the Jews is one that historians do not agree on, which I thought was fascinating to play with.
Wow. Well, I'm really looking forward to that. I loved Beyond the Ghetto Gates. I'm really looking forward to meeting these characters again. And your new novel, Babylon, is just a very mesmerizing, intricate story that you're telling. Where can our listeners find you online, Michelle?
So my website is michelle-cameron.com. And I am also on Instagram at Michelle Cameron Writer, and on Facebook as Michelle Cameron Author. So those are places that I can be found.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Michelle Cameron. And the new book is Babylon. I also want to thank our executive producer, Pam Stack. People of the Book is a copyrighted presentation of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Please visit us and like our Facebook page, People of the Book. I'm your host, Meryl Ain, the author of The Takeaway Men. The sequel, Shadows We Carry, is available now. For more information about my books and writing, visit me at merylain.com. Until next time, please join us on Facebook at Jews Love to Read and read a good book.